somewhere there should be, for all the world to see, a statue of a fool made of stone. Image of a man who let love slip through his hands and then just let him stand there all alone, and there on his face a gold tear should be placed to honor the million tears he's cried. And the hurt in his eyes would show, so everyone would know. Concealed is a broken heart inside. So build a statue and oh, build it high so that all
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Well, you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back?
I just wanna let you know. Yeah, get off of my back and into my game. Get out of my way and out of my brain. Get out of my face and get your best shot.
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds. And if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench. And we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
And there's the right button. Welcome to The Shooting Bench. 13th of August. Raining like crazy again. I'm hoping that everything holds together. It may, because we had some other people down the road here. They started having problems, and then other people started having problems, and then everybody got well all at the same time. So maybe they found something and fixed it. We didn't have any trouble with it yesterday, so we might get through the whole thing here without any problems. I have to apologize to everyone for Liberty Lounge last Friday. We got an hour of it done, and then poof, it just disappeared. I had to call on the taker to doctor things up there, because I couldn't get back on the internet for nothing. And then we went through like a day and a half. Let's see, Friday, Saturday. Yeah, almost 2 days with zero internet here. It's completely gone. And I called them and talked to them. Didn't get anything accomplished there. And then they got to fill out my little survey that they emailed me. And I told them they suck and they need to go out of business. And anyway, it all seems to be working right now. What a bunch of storms we're having. Good grief. I just, people live about 20 miles north of me here just text me and they're out of power. 60,000 people were out of power in Las Vegas for 12 hours, or maybe a little more than 12 hours. 100 miles south of Las Vegas, there was people out there for over 12 hours. What a monstrous dust storm that was that went through the Las Vegas area. And I guess it knocked out trees and power poles and everything else there in Las Vegas. Put a lot of people out of power. And I hope that these people think about this a little bit, because, you know, when you're out of power in Las Vegas, now the lights are flashing. Don't get your hopes up. We may not finish. So I'll just tell you goodbye now, and we'll try to hold in there as long as we can. Well, there goes the lights again. Flashing just briefly. Got a lot of lightning going on. Got a heck of a show going on outside right now. So I don't know if you guys can hear that or not, but it's pounding out there. Man, no. I have no, I have very little hope that we'll get this show finished tonight. Nan says 24,000 out of power around there. So, and Nan is one that has come to a realization that she's not as prepared as she was hoping that she was. Because if you live in that part of the country, or Phoenix, or, you know, any place like that, and you're out of power, you're out of luck. This is, you know, we're not accustomed to living without fans or something. Yeah, I know they did back in 1865, but it's a little bit different. We're not used to it right now. So all these people that are out of power for 12, 15 hours in over 100 degree weather have, oh, some of them, besides Nan, figured out that there's some precautions that need to be taken there. And there's some neat little deals that you can get. You know, you don't need a whole lot. You can survive with a small fan. Of course, you know, if you're very active and trying to do stuff around the house and everything, then maybe not so much, but just to have a little fan blowing on you and making it a little more tolerable doesn't take a whole lot. Now, I found there's some really nice cheap generators out there. You don't need a whole lot. You know, a 1,000-watt generator will do more than you need to do. Almost more than, maybe not more than you want to do, but more than you need to do. You could have several fans and shut some of the fans off, run the microwave and fix dinner if you need to. All the lights you need in a little generator like that. And they're cheap. You know, there's some, matter of fact, there was one here that was an 1800 watt generator for $170. Do I expect this to last, you know, generation after generation running 24 hours a day? No, it's not top of the line. But it would be more than adequate for those few occasions. You know, keep the oil changed, keep it maintained, take some kind of reasonable care of it, and it will last you quite a while, I'm sure. Now, there was another little deal. This is a neat deal. It's a little power source, a little generator power source. It has, it's silent, of course, no engine, no gas, no nothing. You charge this up and keep it charged. It's got AC power inverter, DC, 12 volt, and USB ports. It's basically just a big battery. And it runs 110 volts, 60 hertz, max 200 watts. So, no, it's not going to run a whole lot. But it will charge your electronic devices. It'll run a couple of small fans for you and get you through an emergency. And they're $188. So here for about $350, you could get both of them, have a backup for your backup, and get through these hard times pretty reasonably, I think, pretty comfortably. If you have, you know, in this part of the country, now you, some of you people up in the Pacific Northwest and down in Docks area, you if you haven't been out and visited this part of the country, you may not have any idea what I'm about to talk about right now. I'm going to tell you about a swamp cooler. And I know that there's people in the South that have no earthly idea what a swamp cooler is. But here in the West, where the humidity is usually very low and it's hot, a swamp cooler is by far the most economical, efficient way to get some cooling in the house. And it works good. It'll get plenty of cooling in the house. But when it rains or when it's real high humidity outside, which is why no one in the South uses them, they do not work down there. Pacific Northwest, they're not going to work up there, especially the closer to the coast you get, the more they're not going to work. And no, Mountain Shooter, no, it wasn't a Harbor Freight deal. It was Amazon. It was it's made by Suoki, whoever that is. So, AZ Bound says, so when the power goes dark, now we're camping. Yep, that's right, pretty much. But swamp coolers use so much less power than a refrigerated air unit. So if you're in the South, I mean, no, if you're in the West, someplace where the humidity's low, Las Vegas, great example. If you have a swamp, I guess what I'm trying to get to, if you have a swamp cooler in your home, your apartment, your trailer house, whatever it may be, it doesn't take much of a generator to run it. It takes a whole lot of generator to start a refrigeration unit. Once you get started, it don't take as much to keep it running, but you're not going to take a little 1,000-watt generator and cool your apartment if you have refrigerated air. If you have a little, you know, 1,800, 2,000, 4,000-watt generator, you can run your entire apartment if you keep it, you know. You may have to unplug the freezer for a little while, run the refrigerator, unplug both of them while you're running the air conditioner, but you can do it. You can run all of these things. You may just have to run some of them periodically. Now, I'm going to give you a little piece of advice here. If you're going to try to run your house or part of your house or whatever, there's a couple of ways you can do it, and one of them is real easy, and that's to take a little sturdy little extension cord, two of them. You know, if you've got a junk one laying around or something, cut one end off of it. You'll want male ends on both ends of the extension cord, because you're going to plug one into your generator, and you're going to plug one into your any outside, doesn't have to be outside, it's going to plug it into a receptacle anywhere. Now, the thing you need to do is you need to shut the breaker off that comes from your, you need to shut the breaker off that at your power source where the light comes, where the power comes in from the city or the county or whoever supplies your power. And that needs to be shut off. Otherwise, when you plug that generator in, you're going to be trying to supply power to 24,000 people all over the area there, because that power is going to go right into the main line. And, of course, it's going to blow a fuse. Your generator is going to fizzle, and everything else. So shut that main breaker off first. The main breaker where there's no power coming in from the outside. And then plug your double-ended cord into any place you want to. Any receptacle, and all receptacles will be lit up. You can control that from your breaker box if you don't want certain things running. You don't want power going out to the garage. You don't want, you know, all this stuff. Then use your breakers and shut off whatever you don't want to heat up or light up. And your little generator will work just fine. It'll be just like home. Oh, it is home. Yeah, that's right. Forgot about that. So there's a little piece. I carry a double-ended cord around with me like that all the time. And when I go on a job or go somewhere where I need to, maybe the power hasn't been turned on yet, or maybe it's shut off because there's not anybody living there, you know, whatever. A brand new construction, or the power's out, whatever the case may be, I can take my little generator and plug it into the house on an outside receptacle, or, like I said, inside, doesn't matter. And I can go ahead and do my work, whatever I need to do. I need lights, power, I need to run a saw, I need to listen to the radio, whatever I want to do. I've got it all lit up. When I get done, turn the generator up, unplug the cord, and the power's gone. So, and it's really simple, really easy to do. Just make damn sure, two things. One, make sure that main breaker is shut off. That is imperative. You have to do that. The second thing is make sure some of your stuff is shut off inside. Don't load that generator down with all of that stuff just right away when you start it. Plug it in. It's really going to pull it down. So turn everything off, especially your big stuff. Little lights and stuff maybe is okay, but turn off your freezer, refrigerator, electric stove if you have one, air conditioning unit, all that stuff. Make sure that's all shut off. Get the generator running, get it plugged in, and then turn on what you need a little bit at a time. Boy, that thunder's getting close. Turn on what you need a little bit at a time. Run the refrigerator for an hour. Turn it off. Run the freezer. If you have a separate freezer, turn it off. Run it for an hour. If you have to run heat, turn all that stuff on. Run the heat long enough to get it. Put a sweater on and learn to live with it a little bit cooler. And turn it off and run the, run the refrigerator again, and so on and so forth. AZ Bound, you got a good point there. He says electricians love those that don't follow this advice. So, it's not rocket science. It's basic knowledge. You don't really have to have a whole lot of knowledge about electricity to do this. Just like I said, shut the main breaker off, shut off all your major appliances, plug the cord in. Start the generator, plug the cord in, and you're done. That's all you need to know. And then just run everything very conservatively, a little at a time, until the power comes back on or until you figure out something else. Really simple. Okay, here's your lesson for today. Let's see here. Let me get back over here and get the other part of my crystal ball fired up. I got a new blog post put up. For those of you that don't follow me on Facebook, you may not have seen it. Go to swsablog.com. And I just put up a thing about, it's called Tumultuous Times. And I wrote this about church shootings. The same could be applied to school shootings or anything else. It's about active shooters. And it kind of combines most of the advice there you've probably heard me talk about before, but it kind of combines some of the things. Remember we talked about the school or the principal wanted to arm the have a bucket full of rocks in each classroom, and I thought it was an awesome idea. Read this article, and it explains it a little bit better. Man of Thunder just rolling and rolling, just keeps going and going and going. Still going, still going, still going strong. My goodness. Almost certainly going to be some fires around here tomorrow. No. Anyway, I had a little bit of an ulterior motive here for writing this article. There's churches in the area that don't really follow what I would consider to be prudent procedures for protecting their flock. And a lot of those people are either radio show listeners and or, you know, blog subscribers or whatever. So I can't get these pastors and whatnot to really sit down and really listen to me with this kind of stuff. So I said, you know what? What I'll do, I'm gonna come in the back door here. I'm gonna sneak in here, and I'm gonna put this out for everybody to see. I put it on Facebook and I put it on my blog and I sent it out in an email. And I've reached a lot of people locally. And what I want to try to do is get those people to talk to other people. And they're going to conduct the class for me. They're going to talk to people. You know what? I read this deal, and it kind of makes sense. And here's what the guy was talking about. And Susie B, probably not. I don't know if that's the greatest idea, you know, build an extension cord in water. No, I don't think that's probably not the best deal. You could build it in the water, just don't plug it in until you get out of the water. Or you light up my life, light up your life. Anyway, it's a pretty long deal, but I went through all the things that I've shared with you, you know, numerous times here about active shooters and whatnot. And I'm hoping that it'll get spread enough that even though these leaders don't want to do a class or implement any kind of a plan, that maybe enough members of the congregation will read this and pass the word on so that enough, at least hopefully enough of them will know what to do in the event of an active shooter, that, you know, that they can take care of themselves until cavalry comes. Okay, anyway. No, there's a neat deal. This is not stuff that I usually talk about too much, but this was pretty cool. Y'all know who Aerosmith is, right? Steven Tyler and all that. Well, as of about, I don't know, when did they find it? Anyway, a few days ago. They found the original first tour van of Aerosmith's. It was found in a little Massachusetts town by a group of people, the American Pickers. And this van is so good. It's old, ratty, rusty. It's been parked out in this wooded area since the 70s. And it has Aerosmith written on the sign. It's all hand-painted. They got a graphic of a hippie on the side there running down the road, running somewhere. And they found it. These people, American Pickers group found it here. And they bought it for $25,000, which I guess that guy realized it's been sitting out in the field all this time, and it hadn't been bothered anything. It hadn't bothered to try to put it on out up for auction or do anything. But now somebody's found it. It's worth $25,000. Get ready. Here comes the thunder. That lightning was Wow. That was fun.
The it's an International Harvester Metro is what this little van is. And it's close to a house. Property owner didn't want everybody to know his name, just called him Phil. And I guess he's way deep in the woods. He's off the grid. And they're thinking, what in the world would this van be doing out here? So the true story hasn't been confirmed yet by CBS News, and it's nobody knows exactly why Aerosmith abandoned it out there. But I thought it was kind of a neat story anyway. Anyhow, $25,000 for this rock and roll piece of nostalgia here.
All the fires going on, I guess if you guys have been keeping up with that, Yosemite now closed indefinitely as California's fires now are breaking record after record, the largest in history. And they say that it's so close to Yosemite there, and it, I haven't looked at it today. It may burn. I don't know. But that's going to take a pretty good bite out of California's income there. That's the fifth most visited national park in the country.
And those people spend money when they go there. The Doc, sorry, no, I don't. I actually turned all my 7x57 Mauser brass into 257 Roberts brass a long time ago. Haven't gotten any since then, but neat caliber, though. Anyhow, the pictures of this deal on about Yosemite is just horrendous. Says there's at least 17 large fires, one of which is the largest fire in California history. They, in total, over 14,000 firefighters are battling fires all across California. The National Guard has sent in over 2,300 people to help contain the fire, and international assistance from Australia and New Zealand are on hand out there. The Mendocino Complex fire doubled in size in the past few days, making it the largest fire in recorded history. So, as much as I dislike the politics and a lot of the people in California, I do like the country where this stuff is burning. I like it a lot. And it's heartbreaking to see all the destruction that this is,
that's happening here. But we'll see after it's all done. Like I've said several times, you know, some of these fires are good fires. They clear off a lot of underbrush and stuff. But the thing that people are waking up. This fire, unfortunately, it took this disaster to wake up some of the powers that be, and they are blaming now the EPA and the governor of California and others for the Forest Service for poor forest management. They're realizing now that this stuff has got to be cleaned up, and because it's not, the benefit of forest fires is not as prevalent as it once was. Because back when we used to log and graze and do all this stuff, number one, fires didn't start as easily. Number two, when they did, they were much easier to control. And number three, when they got out of hand and rushed across, you know, thousands of acres, all they did was just scoot along the ground, burn a few smaller dead trees and stuff, and it wasn't nearly as catastrophic as it is nowadays, which is clearly witnessed by the Rodeo Chedisky fire and the Wallow fire here in Arizona and New Mexico. And there, it's yet to be seen how much damage is going to be done by these fires in California, but I'm guessing it's going to be a lot. From some of the pictures I've seen, it looks pretty dang bad.
Let me see. Let me go look over here. I haven't looked at the chat room here for a few minutes. So. Let's Let's see. I did. Yakima Glocky said he took a load of that to the scrapyard. I did take a bunch of
cartridge brass, 400 pounds of it, as a matter of fact. When I, no, that wasn't nearly that much brass. I took 400 pounds of lead and not nearly that much brass. So I did, however, take 84 pounds of brass when I left Fort Irwin, California. I took 84 pounds of brass down to the scrap dealer there on right outside of on the edge of Barstow, or what used to be the edge of Barstow. And I don't remember what kind of money we got for it. That was 19 whatever, 70 something. Let's see. No, 82. Must have been 1984. Yeah, probably 84. When I got out of the Army, I went and sold all that brass. All this brass was stuff we picked up out in the California desert. We'd go out there shooting and messing around and exploring old mines and shooting jackrabbits and whatever. And we'd stumble upon these huge areas of brass.
Stand by. I'm trying to do something here and it's not working. All right, there it went.
Anyway, I think I've probably told you that story before, but we take and I still have brass to this day left over out there in the reloading room, left over from those days where we'd go along and pick up, you know, 100, 200, 300, 500 rounds of brand new 223s and 9mm and whatever the case may be. And out of all that, all the Berdan Prime stuff and all the bent-up stuff and all that, there was stuff there in calibers that we couldn't reload or couldn't sell. Now, a lot of it we took down to the Powderhorn Gun Shop in Barstow and sold it by the each. You know, we'd get like 2 and 3 cents a piece. Some of the more common stuff, I don't remember. I don't think there's anything less than 2 cents. I don't believe there was any penny stuff, but a lot of it 2 and 3 cents. And some of it was a nickel or so. And everything that we couldn't sell to him, we took to the scrapyard at the end when I got ready to leave California. And that was a pretty good deal. What year did I leave Germany? That was, I got there in 82. I must have left in 83. I got there, must have been about February of, let's see, August. No, it must have been about August of 80. Must have been 84. Must have been about August of 84 that I left there. Let's see. I went in September of 82. And, shoot, I have to go and look. Let's see. It was the following fall of 83, so it must have been the fall of 85 that I left Germany.
And that was, that'd be about right. You knew me in 84, so that would be, must have been 85 when I left there. And I got out early, out of Fort Irwin on the Graham-Rudman Act, and I got out, I don't remember what it was, 3 months or 6 months early or something like that. And so I got out in the summer of, the spring of 86, I think it was. So, anyway.
All
right, let's look here and see what else we got. Yosemite there. All right, now here's a guy. I read all of this story, I think, or the biggest part of it. This is a guy that is he's running for Arizona Senate, and he's got a little bit of a disturbing past here, and I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to win his seat. The title of the story makes it even worse. The title says, Arizona Senate candidate who killed his mother threatened HOA president in 2016. Now, that's liberal reporting for you. There's more to the story, a lot more to the story. Now, the guy does have a little bit of trouble, I think, a little bit of trouble getting along with people. But he, I guess when he was a kid, it's got his age in here, I forgot what it was when he was little. He had woke up and his mother had tried to kill him in his sleep, according to his story here, and fired numerous shots at him. The guy kept, you know, dodging and running, and he finally was able to get down on the floor and grab a 22 single shot rifle and shot her in the head. And during this time, she tried to swing the rifle at him and hit his sister in the head and caved the little girl's head in. Well, they said they used to store gasoline in his bedroom because they didn't have any. They had gasoline in glass bottles in his bedroom, and because it was the coolest place in the house. Still kind of stupid, but the whole story makes sense after if you hear the rest of it here. During all this shooting, she had nicked one of those bottles and had cracked it, and gas was leaking out. Didn't shatter it. The way I understood the story, and leaked gas over. He started to run out, and they flipped a light switch, and the light switch apparently flew enough of a spark to ignite the gasoline. This part of the story is apparently true because they found him unconscious outside the house. The house blew up, and it threw him through the wall or through the window or whatever, and they found him unconscious outside. Took him to the hospital, got him squared away, but with all this stuff going on here, he had lost his memory of the whole thing. He had no idea why he didn't have a mother and why the house was gone or how he got there or anything else. So some years later, some event happened and he regained his memory and was able to tell the whole story as to what happened, which was as big a surprise to him, evidently, as it was to everybody else. So if you look at the title, Senate candidate killed his mother. Well, that's not exactly. They could have said this a little bit differently. One of the newspaper stories says Bobby Wilson, is the guy's name, confesses that he murdered his mother and sister last Thursday. Well, this was when he still had amnesia and had no idea what had happened. When he admitted this. So, kind of weird. But then, be that as it may, if that's all true or not, it appears to be. But then he, according to the story, threatened to attack the HOA president here, where he lived. So, big, big, long, extended story goes with that. But anyway, I mean, it don't matter whether any of it's true or not. What matters is it's a story, and it's in the paper and on the internet and everything else. And I just can't imagine that that's going to be really good for his campaign here. Anyway. Let's see here. Has anyone tried to cast brass in anything worth the time? Probably not, AZ Bound. I imagine that that's you'd have to have so much more heat and everything. That's probably going to be more trouble than it's worth. And I don't know for sure. Never tried to do it, but it doesn't sound like it's fruitful to me. Okay. Looking at the stuff posted in the chat room.
So anyhow,
gotta get my cotton picking story straight here.
If you're in Arizona, I talked about this a little bit the other day. It's gotten worse,
and that is the one candidate we have here, Wendy Rogers, retired colonel, I think, lieutenant colonel, out of the Air Force. I think I already told you all that, and I told you about her story she's making up about Steve Smith, who is another candidate for the same seat. Both Republicans, and I went and seen Wendy, and she talked a pretty good story. She had me convinced, and I'm convinced that everything that she said was probably the truth. But what is not the truth are the stories that she's making up about Steve Smith. Now, it's gotten so bad now that the Arizona Police Association has jumped on board and said that the things that she's doing is despicable. And several other Republican lawmakers have done the same thing. So I'm really curious to see what this does to her, what this does to her race. That's going to be quite a story here before it's all said and done, I think. So, one of the things that we got to do last night is move chickens. Boy, that was fun. But it was kind of interesting. This is the second or third batch of chickens that we've got now, young. We got them as very, very young baby chicks. And, of course, the easiest way to move them in with the general population is to wait till night, and then you just reach in there and pick them up, and they don't care. They just kind of freeze. And there's a separate little shed out there that's separate from the rest of the chickens. We put a roost in it yesterday and everything, and built a little makeshift door for it. And it's kind of funny watching these things. We put them in there late last night. Now, that wasn't late. It was late evening, I guess. And set them on the roost, closed the door, and left them in there for a little while this morning after light. So that was, they had food in there and everything. And they kind of got used to being in there. Then we opened the door, and they run out and they, you know, looked around and everything. Of course, the bigger chickens are kind of establishing that pecking order there and making sure they stayed in line. But it's funny because this little house, when we left them in there long enough, they had bonded with this little thing and called it home. And anytime anything would happen, instead of going with the rest of the chickens, they would all turn and just run as hard as they could go into this little, there with the lights flashing again. There it is again. Stand by. We may be off the air here in the blink of an eye. So, anyway, I just thought it was kind of interesting watching them. We've had, that's going to make 12, 24, that's going to make about 35 chickens we've got right now or something like that. So some of the non-producers will go in the freezer and we'll kind of get everything thinned out and sorted out here before long. But we'll be back in the egg business here before long. That's been a kind of a staple for feeding some of these smaller animals is the eggs. We had so many. We had people give us chickens. We bought a few chickens. You know, we had family members move and left us chickens. Here's all these cotton picking chickens around here.
and they all start laying eggs. And I guess you could just as easily pick them up and throw them out across the pasture and let the pack rats eat them or whatever. But we brought them all in, and pretty soon we had like 6 or 8 dozen eggs in the fridge. So we started advertising with the fresh eggs. And have no problem at all getting $3 a dozen for them. And that was more than enough to pay for the chicken food. So they are producing animals. They're paying their way. You know, it doesn't matter what they eat as long as they keep laying eggs. That's how it works. You work and you can live here. We haven't eaten too many of them, but there's a few of them in the freezer waiting to be eaten. But the eggs have been quite a blessing there. Susie B, it looks like whatever he put there, everybody's watching that video there, and everybody quit talking. Oh, well. So do I, Susie B. That's one thing about, our neighbor over here has, he's all half a mile or so south of us, has conducted an experiment with these eggs, gotten some fresh eggs. You know, we don't wash the eggs when you go and get them. You just go get them out of the, nest and put them in the fridge just like they are. When you wash them, it takes some of the protective membrane off the shell, and they don't last as long. So, what? Bloom. Amy said it's called bloom. So, we don't wash the bloom off the egg, off the blooming eggs. But, anyway, our friend down here conducted an experiment. You know, there's different ways that you can save eggs, make them last a lot longer. And of course, one of the things is to not take that bloom off of there. And there's another thing that you can do. You coat them in mineral oil and put them in sawdust and put them up and keep them out of intense heat and stuff. And these, we did put eggs in the freezer, actually, Susie B. And I know that he's opened them, the first ones at the 6-month mark, and they were fine, no problem at all. And I'm not sure, I think it's been a year and a half now or so, maybe more. He hadn't updated me on what the rest of them are doing. Susie B, well, we have eggs in the freezer right now as we spricken, as a matter of fact. Of course, these are in a carton, and they're supposed to be in the freezer. But I took some and put them in little Tupperware containers, took the shell off of them, put them in Tupperware containers, and put them in the freezer. And they work fine. It's not there's not a thing in the world wrong with them. So. That's a fact, Susie B. We know that. You don't need to put them in the fridge, man. But to some degree, it depends on where you can keep them. You've got to be reasonably cool or they don't last very long. But anyway, so there's your farm talk for the day anyway. That stuff Mother Earth has probably already told you anyway. So, but it's been interesting, you know, doing it yourself. It's nice to have small animals that are somewhat productive. You know, we've got rabbits that are good for nothing but meat, of course. You know, got a few more of those fixing to go in the freezer. And rabbits are cheap enough to feed, and chickens are cheap enough to feed, that it doesn't take a whole lot for them to be productive enough to justify their existence. Dogs justify their existence by barking, by providing companionship, and whatever. Cats justify their existence by catching mice, and that's a big problem around here is pack rats. I don't know if any of you know what pack rats are, but pack rats can get pretty dang big, and they make big nests out there. And between pack rats and mice, a lot of people around here have problems with mice getting up there and eating the electrical, the wiring harnesses in these vehicles.
And causing thousands of dollars worth of damage by damaging these wiring harnesses. Now, there's a couple things you can do to prevent that, and one of them is leaving the hoods open on your cars at night. And there's several, our very next closest neighbor over here, about 300 yards away, I guess. That's what they do. We don't. We've got a couple of cats out there that are productive by keeping the mice down and the rats down. We found a big old head and a tail of a big old pack rat laying out there. It's funny that they kill these animals and they eat part of them, and they lay them at the door like a peace offering.
And that's the only thing I can figure with why they do that. Like, here, look at me. Are you proud of me? How do they know I'm proud of them for killing a mouse? What makes them think that I'm proud of them for doing something that comes natural to them? But I've seen it happen, I'll bet, hell, 50 times since we've been here. 30 times, whatever. I don't know. But they lay it right in front of the door of the pickup, right where you step out. If you step out of the truck, you'll step on the mouse. Or they lay them right in front of the back door of the house. Every time. And that's kind of weird to me. I don't know exactly what they're you know, they say animals can't reason, so I don't know what they, where they get their reason for doing this, but whatever. Yeah, it's a bad thing about pack rats, Yakima Glock. You know what they are. They will take anything that's not nailed down. They'll take jewelry, like I said, small gun parts, ammo, anything. They're really fond of stuff that's shiny. Jewelry, necklaces, flip-top, you know, lids off of cans and that kind of stuff. And they take them to their nests. Some of these pack rat nests are huge. I mean, there's some that out there they build. I don't know how long it takes them to build them, but there's one out here just east of the house here a little ways. Probably 6 foot diameter and 20, 24 inches tall. Something like that. And I don't know what all. One thing that you can find in there, and I think I may have mentioned this once before, I'm going to mention it again right now and then I'm going to sign off. But in these pack rat nests, if you're ever lost out in the woods somewhere, and you're in an area that has pack rats and you're starving, find a pack rat nest and tear it apart, and you will find in there nuts and berries and stuff like that. If you're in a place that has pinyons, there'll be literally thousands of pinyons in there I would make every attempt to rinse them off if possible. Before you eat them, of course. But, I mean, if you can't, we'll just have to work on anything, any problems that cause later. But you keep that in mind. If you're ever out where you have pack rat nests, there's stuff in there that you can eat. They stockpile stuff for the winter, lots of it. Lots and lots of food in there. Okay, well, we managed to bumble through another one here. Hang on just a second. There we go. Oh, man, that didn't work. What in the world? That was not a good thing. Let's try that. You know, I'm really surprised. I'm happy, but I'm really surprised that we made it through this show without thing with the lights flickering and everything carrying on. I thought it was, I was very impressed. All right, let me paste that in there and get that part of it running. All right. Well, I've had all the fun I can stand. I'm glad you guys hung in there with me. We kind of got off on a tangent and left a couple of our stories hanging in the balance here. We'll get those Wednesday. Hoping that everything goes well with the Internet, and then we'll have Liberty Lounge on again
as normal this coming Friday. We've got a little rifle class coming up this Friday. We're working with some people on bolt-action rifles. Remember I told you here, it's been a couple of years ago now, that I developed a class called the Dedicated Rifleman class. And it's become kind of popular. It's kind of a neat class. It's a lot of fun. All right, before I get off on yet another tangent, I think I'm going to get out of here. We'll see you guys Wednesday. Thanks.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
Reconciliation. No, let's talk it over now.